Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Tuesday, August 9th, 2022. White House says it had no advanced warning of the FBI's executing a search warrant on the Florida home of former President Donald Trump. Various media outlets reporting that search having to do with classified documents the former president may have taken with him when he left office. Coming up, we'll get reaction to the search from the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Republican Senator Rick Scott, plus analysis with law professor Kimberly Whaley. Also today, President Joe Biden signing into law a bill that promotes the U.S. computer chip industry and other paperwork to have the U.S. agree to admit Finland and Sweden into NATO. A White House monkeypox response team proposal to increase the limited supply of monkeypox vaccine doses by turning one dose into five. And we'll remember award-winning historian David McCullough, who just passed away, with C-SPAN's retired CEO Brian Lamb talking about the long relationship between David McCullough and this network. Reuters reporting from Palm Beach, Florida, former U.S. President Donald Trump on Tuesday tried to turn the news of an FBI search of his Florida estate to his benefit, citing the investigation in text messages and emails soliciting political donations from his supporters. In a fundraising email on Tuesday, the former president wrote, "As they watch my endorsed candidates win big victories and see my dominance in all polls, they are trying to stop the Republican Party and me once more. The lawlessness, political persecution, and witch hunt must be exposed and stopped." The article goes on, "The unprecedented search of the home of former president marked a significant escalation of the federal investigation into whether Trump illegally removed records from the White House as he was leaving office in January 2021. After former President Trump confirmed the search Monday night in a statement, many news organizations citing unnamed White House officials saying that President Joe Biden and others in the White House not aware of what the FBI was planning. Today, these questions to the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
The FBI is serving a search warrant on the former president's residence in Florida. Was the president or anyone at the White House aware of that search warrant, or has anyone at the White House or the president been briefed in the aftermath of that search warrant being executed?
No, the president was not briefed, was not aware of it. No, no one at the White House was given a heads up. No, that did not happen.
Is the White House at all concerned, given the domestic political climate, but also the signal that it sends to the rest of the world that the Department of Justice carried out this sort of operation on a former president, that it could even create the appearance of politically motivated prosecutors?
So first off, and you've heard us say this many times at this podium, you've heard the president say this, the Justice Department conducts investigations independently, and we leave any law enforcement matters to them. It would not be appropriate for us to comment on any ongoing investigations. I can say that President Biden has been unequivocal since the campaign. He believes in the rule of law, in the independence of the Justice Department investigations, that those investigations should be free from political influence, and he has held that commitment as president. I want to also remind you all of what he said on January 7th of 2021, when he then nominated Merrick Garland to be the Attorney General, and I quote, "We need to restore the honor, the integrity of the independence of the Department of Justice in this nation that has been so badly damaged. And so many former leaders of that department in both parties have so testified and stated that. I want to be clear to those who lead this department who you will serve. You won't work for me. You are not the president or the vice president's lawyer. Your loyalty is not to me. It's to the law, the Constitution, the people of this nation to guarantee justice," end quote. So I would refer you to the Department of Justice.
And just lastly, does the White House or the president believe it would be helpful both domestically and signal that sends abroad for the Department of Justice to be more open about the reasons for that search warrant, the underlying evidence there?
Again, this is not something I'm going to comment on today or from here at all. This goes to the Department of Justice, and that's where I refer you to.
The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre getting reporters' questions in the White House briefing room. The House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, posting a statement Monday night after the search was confirmed by former President Trump. Kevin McCarthy writing, "I've seen enough. The Department of Justice has reached an intolerable level of weaponized politicization. When Republicans take back the House, we will conduct immediate oversight of this department, follow the facts, and leave no stone unturned." Congressman McCarthy adding in the tweet, "Attorney General Merrick Garland, preserve your documents and clear your calendar," suggesting the Attorney General would be called to testify. More from the White House press secretary. Questions from Peter Ducey, Fox News Channel White House correspondent.
Is there a concern here that if you guys don't say more, then these Republicans who are accusing this White House of weaponizing the Justice Department, weaponizing the FBI, are... but that's going to become the public sentiment. If you guys don't say once and for all, we are not doing that.
First of all, we're just not going to comment on the Department of Justice investigation.
Okay,
we're just not going to comment on that.
Is this White House weaponizing the Justice Department and the FBI against political opponents?
The president has been very clear from before he was elected, very clear on this. Hold on. Throughout his time in office.
I heard the quote. We will be playing the quote tonight at 6 o'clock. Is this administration weaponizing the Justice Department and the FBI against political opponents?
Peter, the president believes in the rule of law. The president believes in the independence of the Department of Justice.
That's a yes or no.
No, it's a yes or a no for you. I'm answering the question. You may not like it, but I'm answering the question. I'm answering the question, and I'm telling you that we are not going to comment on a criminal investigation. The president has been very clear. I laid out what his thoughts were back on January 7th in 2021 about how he saw the Department of Justice. And I'm just going to leave it there. We are not going to comment from here, from this White House, on a criminal investigation that is currently happening.
The White House press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, with reporters in the White House briefing room. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, interviewed this morning on NBC's Today Show. She, too, said she was not given a heads up about the FBI's action at Mar-a-Lago.
I, as others, learned on my phone that that had happened, so I don't know very much about it. But again, I'm sure that information will be revealed, and when it does, we'll find out what they were looking for. It seems to have something to do with presidential documents, but I really am not in a position to talk about it because all I know is what's in the public domain.
Does it strike you as a pretty serious step for the Justice Department to take?
Yes, I think it does. I was questioning it because all I saw on my phone was that Donald Trump said that the visit took place and described it in pretty harsh terms. It would be interesting to find out exactly what the warrant was in order to have, what the order was to have a search warrant and for what purpose. But again, we can only speculate.
And before we leave it, I just want to mention House Republican leader, your counterpart, Kevin McCarthy, put out a statement responding to the search. And he said, in part, when Republicans take back the House, we will conduct immediate oversight of this Justice Department. Attorney General Garland, preserve your documents and clear your calendar. Do you have a response?
Well, first of all, I think the Democrats are going to win the House. We've been prepared for it for a long time. And now with what's happening with Roe v. Wade and the legislation that we are passing, I think that whatever the leader is saying is probably idle. But nonetheless, we believe in the rule of law, and that's what our country is about, and no person is above the law, not even the President of the United States, not even a former President of the United States.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on NBC's Today Show this morning. Former Vice President Mike Pence tweeting today, I share the deep concern of millions of Americans over the unprecedented search of a personal residence of President Trump. No former president of the United States has ever been subject to a raid of their personal residence in American history. After years where FBI agents were found to be acting on political motivation during our administration, the appearance of continued partisanship by the Justice Department must be addressed. That tweet from Mike Pence. Senator Rick Scott, Republican from Florida, tweeting, "When Republicans retake the majority in the Senate, there will be a thorough and aggressive investigation into the FBI's raid of Mar-a-Lago. Everything needs to be on the table for AG Garland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, including impeachment, if he doesn't come out today and explain what happened." Senator Scott was also interviewed about this on Fox Business Channel this morning.
"We have no power other than ask questions, all right, because they won't come testify. Gary Peters, who runs Homeland Security, will not do an investigation of this. He won't do an investigation of Hunter Biden. He won't do an investigation of anybody that's on the Democrat side. So we have to get a majority. We have to get a majority in the House. We have to get a majority in the Senate so we can find out exactly what's going on and make Americans more comfortable that their government's not out to get them. That's exactly what people are worried about right now. Is America is your federal government going to come after you because of your political position? That's exactly what the concern Americans have. And whether you're Republican, Democrat, or Independent, you should be worried. If this is where our government works from now on, if you're going back and forth who's in power and they're going to go after their opponents, this is a tough place to live."
This is not happening in a vacuum. This is not happening in a bubble. This has happened to conservatives and to President Trump over and over again. I go back to the IRS witch hunt of conservatives. Lois Lerner took the fifth. Why? We never got to the bottom of that. And then President Trump, his campaign and his presidency, the target, again, using the FBI and the Justice Department as a political weapon against a candidate and then a sitting president. And then again, because of two FBI agents, Hunter Biden getting a pass that they were.
And they're never accountable. The federal government that does all these bad things, the federal government that does all these bad things and targets conservatives, no one's ever held accountable. No one. You never hear of anybody fired. You never hear anybody demoted. You never hear anything happening to any of these people that do the wrong thing. This should scare the living daylights out of American citizens and say, we have got to change our federal government. The way our federal government has gone, it's like what we thought about the Gestapo and people like that, that they just go after people. What we thought about Soviet Union, what we look at Latin America, we have got to say to ourselves, this cannot be our country. We have got to say, we're a country of laws, not of people that are attacking their political opponent and get away with it. I mean, this Donald Trump is a potential opponent to Joe Biden. Why is this happening? If it's not because he's a potential opponent, then Merrick Garland, Joe Biden, Chris Fraser need to come out and say, why are they doing that? And why couldn't they do this another way?
Senator Rick Scott, Republican from Florida, on Fox Business Channel this morning on the Mornings with Maria program. When former President Trump issued a statement Monday night about what happened, it began this way. He wrote, "My beautiful home, Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida, is currently under siege, raided, and occupied by a large group of FBI agents." C-SPAN asked law professor Kimberly Whaley whether raid is the right term to use in this situation and what may be behind the FBI's actions.
Well, a raid is not a legal term, so that's not a term that I would use. And it's also, I think, a bit incendiary and misleading. This was the execution of a warrant under the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. George III, the King of England, at the time of the Revolution, had the power to issue what are called general warrants, where they could his officers could go into homes and just randomly raid them. And the framers were upset about that, did not want that authority for the American government. So it's actually many steps of the process that has to go through, both within the federal government, including through FBI Director Christopher Wray, who was appointed by Donald Trump, through the Justice Department and to a federal judge. And there's a standard. We call it probable cause, but there has to be an affidavit articulating evidence under oath that demonstrates to the judge that there's probable cause to believe that there's evidence of a crime on the premises. The warrant has to be very particularized. The FBI or the people that conduct the search are not allowed to just grab things that they want. If there is evidence of a crime in plain sight, they can take that. But after, even after what happened yesterday, there's a very careful process to protect materials that aren't covered by the warrant. So, you know, that's kind of a rhetoric. It's sort of a politics to call it a raid. But this is really the justice system under the Constitution functioning as it should. The fact that it happens to be Donald Trump really is because he didn't comply, it looks like, with the Presidential Records Act. So we all have to have accountability and consequences for our actions, including former presidents. So if he didn't want to see something like this happen, he should have complied with the law, frankly.
Well, he said in his statement that this was unnecessary, that he had been cooperating with all government agencies.
Well, you know, again, if that is his point of view, but he did take 15 boxes. We know that alone, right? And we also know, reportedly, they contained communications, for example, with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. We also know from Cassidy Hutchinson, who testified before the January 6th committee, top aide to Mark Meadows, who was Donald Trump's chief of staff, that she witnessed Mark Meadows burning documents in the White House. So unfortunately, Donald Trump's word is no longer, if it ever was, frankly, something that people can rely on. Maybe people love him for that. But that's not how the system of justice works. Things have to be authenticated and verified. And for, you know, a long time ago, with thousands and thousands of lies out of the White House, Donald Trump lost the ability to stand behind his word. He's no Abe Lincoln in that regard. And so I have no access to the warrant. I don't know why the Justice Department, the FBI, decided they had to do this, and presumably in order to preserve any records for fear that maybe they'd be destroyed or something could happen to them. But Donald Trump's statement is unfortunately not something that I put a ton of weight in here when it comes to the various levels of independent oversight that had to happen for yesterday's historic event to occur.
You mentioned the Presidential Records Act. What questions do you think that judge was asking when the FBI went to him or her to get this warrant granted?
Well, you know, this is a very high level. The fact that it is a former president means this judge wanted to see a extremely, extremely high level of proof that there is probable cause to believe there's evidence of a crime there. The fact that records were taken out of the White House, that has been public for a long time. That would not be enough to trigger this kind of action. So, you know, speculation isn't really helpful in this moment, but I can rest assured that this judge went kicking and screaming, so to speak. That is, really put the Justice Department, the FBI, through the paces, and we don't know what additional evidence there is. I mean, for example, Alex Jones turned over inadvertently through his lawyers in the Sandy Hook, Texas case, his text messages, which included messages relating to January 6th. We don't know what those contain. Mark Meadows is in hot water, potentially criminally, as are other people within Trump's orbit. We don't know who is talking to the Justice Department. It's impossible in this moment for the public to know what was in the affidavit that justified, in a federal judge's mind, and in the mind of Christopher Wray, presumably Merrick Garland, and many other people that were involved in this process, this historic and politically very fraught and troubling event that occurred yesterday.
Kimberly Whaley, American University law professor and ABC News legal contributor, joining C-SPAN on this morning's Washington Journal. New York Times with updates on this story includes this. For the past 6 years, Donald J. Trump's most loyal backers have, as though by reflex, attacked federal law enforcement officials whenever they have sought to investigate the former president or his allies. But the reaction to the FBI's court-approved search of Mar-a-Lago, Mr. Trump's beachfront residence in Palm Beach, Florida, went far beyond the usual ire and indignation. Pro-Trump influencers, figures in the media, and even some Republican candidates for office employed the language of violence to rally opposition. That from the New York Times. This from Fox News. Former President Trump posted a campaign ad-style video on his social media platform Truth Social early Tuesday morning, hours after his Mar-a-Lago estate was raided by FBI agents in Palm Beach, Florida. Here is a minute of that.
We are a nation that allowed Russia to devastate a country, Ukraine, killing hundreds of thousands of people, and it will only get worse. We're a nation that has weaponized its law enforcement against the opposing political party like never before. We've never seen anything like this. We're a nation that no longer has a free and fair press. Fake news is about all you get. We are a nation where free speech is no longer allowed, where crime is rampant like never before, where the economy has been collapsing, where more people died of COVID in 2021 than in 2020. We are a nation that is allowing Iran to build a massive nuclear weapon and China to use the trillions and trillions of dollars it's taken from the United States to build a military to rival our own. We are a nation that over the past 2 years is no longer respected or listened to all around the world. And we are a nation that is hostile to liberty and freedom and faith. We are a nation whose economy is floundering, whose stores are not stocked, whose deliveries are not coming, and whose educational system is ranked at the bottom of every list. We are a nation that in many ways has become a joke. But soon we will have greatness again. It was hardworking patriots like you who built this country, and it is hardworking patriots like you who are going to save our country.
Former President Trump narrating a video. You heard part of it. It runs about 4 minutes that he put out early this morning. In the background, you're hearing the sound effect of a thunderstorm. Today, a federal appeals court ruling that the IRS must hand over former President Trump's tax returns to the House Ways and Means Committee, ruling against the former president's arguments that complying would violate separation of powers and First Amendment privacy concerns. The Ways and Means Committee Chair Richard Neal, Democrat from Massachusetts, requested former President Trump's tax returns back in 2019 under a law that permits the disclosure of an individual's tax returns to the congressional committee. It has been in court ever since. This is Washington Today. From Associated Press, President Joe Biden on Tuesday signed a $280 billion bipartisan bill to boost domestic high-tech manufacturing, part of the administration's push to boost U.S. competitiveness over China. Flanked by scores of lawmakers, union officials, local politicians, and business leaders, President Biden vetted the legislation, a core part of his economic agenda that will incentivize investments in the American semiconductor industry in an effort to ease U.S. reliance on overseas supply chains for critical cutting-edge goods. That from AP. President Biden spoke on the South Lawn of the White House.
Over 30 years ago, America had 40% of the global production of these chips. And then something happened. American manufacturing, the backbone of our economy, was hollowed out. We let semiconductor manufacturing go overseas. And as a result, today, we barely produce 10% of the semiconductors, despite being the leader in chips design as well as research. And as we saw during the pandemic, when factories that make these chips shut down, the global economy comes to a screeching halt, driving up costs for families. And everyone, not just here, but around the world. One-third of the core inflation last year was due to the higher price for automobiles, and a shortage of semiconductors. Folks, we need to make these chips here in America to bring down everyday costs and create jobs. Don't take my word for it. Listen to some of the business leaders here today and across the country. They're making decisions right now about where to invest and ramp up production for these semiconductors. Many are foreigners making investments, companies making, deciding where in the world to go, and they've chosen the United States of America. They look at China, Japan, South Korea, the European Union, all making historic investments of billions of dollars to track the businesses to their countries to produce these chips. But these industry leaders also see America is back and leading the way. During my State of the Union, I described the Field of Dreams on 1,000 acres outside of Columbus, Ohio, where America's future will be built. Intel, whose CEO is here today, Pat Gelsinger, is here today. He's going to break ground in the next generation semiconductor factory in central Ohio early this fall. American company Micron is announcing today that because of this law, it's going to invest $40 billion over 10 years to build factories and special chips called memory chips that store information on your smartphone. Investment. This investment alone is going to create 40,000 jobs.
President Biden on the South Lawn of the White House. More from the Associated Press article. This bill has been more than a year in the making, but finally cleared both chambers of Congress late last month with significant bipartisan margins. The Senate passed it 64-33 with 17 GOP senators supporting it, while the House quickly followed suit with a 243-187 vote that included 24 House Republicans in favor, even though party leaders began urging their ranks to vote against it after Democrats advanced a separate sweeping bill focused on climate and health care. That from AP. Wall Street today, the Dow down 58, NASDAQ down 150, S&P down 17. CNBC reporting investors are awaiting the latest reading of the July Consumer Price Index due Wednesday. The report is expected to show a slight slowdown in inflation, thanks in part to a fall in oil prices, which could inform the market about the next steps for the Federal Reserve. Back to President Biden, you heard during his remarks about the computer chip bill that he was coughing quite a bit. He was in isolation the past 2 weeks after testing first positive for COVID-19 and then positive again in a so-called rebound infection, about 5 days isolated in both cases. White House says the president is testing negative. He tested negative yesterday and this morning. The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre asked about the coughing.
At the earlier chip signing, the president had several coughing episodes. Is it possible to get an update from his physician about his status after his recovery from COVID, please?
So as you know, we shared his negative test today. He has tested negative Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and now today. We have also said many times, I think during the briefing when we were talking about his COVID case, that he experiences coughs from time to time, independent of him getting COVID. And what he's experiencing right now is the lingering effects of COVID, which is something I'm sure many of us who have had COVID have endured or have to deal with. And so that's what you're seeing at this time. No, there's no update needed. We had actually said that this was a possibility. We had been clear about that. We actually shared that he has an inhaler that he uses from time to time because he has experienced coughs, as you've heard him from even before COVID, that he has dealt with. And basically what you're seeing right now is lingering effects of that. And we spoke to the doctor about this, and that's what he relayed to us specifically.
The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. The White House monkeypox response team giving an update on the fight against that virus today. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra talking about a plan to stretch out the supply of monkeypox vaccine doses by allowing providers to inject 1/5 of the currently authorized dose.
On May 18th, the first case of monkeypox was reported in the U.S. Today, we have some 8,900 cases that have been reported. At the time that first case was reported, within 2 days, we at HHS began to ship out vaccines to the various states that were asking for help. To date, we've made more than 1.1 million vaccine doses available throughout the country, and we've delivered more than 620,000 of those doses. We've also deployed more than 15,000 courses of the TPOXX treatment and have increased the country's capacity to administer tests on a weekly basis to some 80,000. Last week, I declared a public health emergency to address the monkeypox outbreak. Today, we take another important step. I've exercised my authority under the Section 564 of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act to allow the FDA to take further measures to safely increase the availability of vaccines to prevent monkeypox. Dr. Califf, the FDA commissioner, will go into greater detail on FDA's issuance of an emergency use authorization for the JYNNEOS vaccine and what today's FDA action means for patients, providers, and states and jurisdictions. This is very welcome news in our fight against monkeypox. Today's action will boost and strengthen our response further. It safely accelerates and multiplies our supply of effective vaccines by up to fivefold. Today's action also reaffirms HHS and this administration's commitment to using all available resources and capabilities to end the monkeypox outbreak and provide the best possible care to those suffering from the virus.
Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra at today's virtual White House Monkeypox Response Team news conference. The FDA commissioner that he referred to, Dr. Robert Califf, went on to say that there's a study that shows a 1/5 monkeypox vaccine dose injected into the skin rather than a full dose into the underlying fat produces a similar immune response. And Bob Fenton, White House Monkeypox Response Coordinator, says the federal government has distributed 670,000 vials of monkeypox vaccine and has 400,000 vials, or a little bit more than 400,000 vials, in the national stockpile ready to be shipped as needed. And with this 5x increase, it could vaccinate 2 million Americans. The emergency use authorization also allowing for the vaccination of children. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today, which you can get as a podcast on the free C-SPAN Now mobile video app and wherever you get your podcasts. An AP story from Monday begins, from Philadelphia to Portland to Los Angeles, killings and gun violence are rising at the same time officers worn out by the pandemic and disillusioned over the calls to divest from policing are quitting or retiring faster than they can be replaced. Departments are scrambling to recruit in a tight labor market and also rethinking what services they can provide. Many have shifted veteran officers to patrol, breaking up specialized teams to keep up with 911 calls. That from AP. Today, there was an event that promoted National Faith and Blue Weekend. It's going to be in October. And according to the group's website, it facilitates safe and stronger communities by engaging law enforcement officers and local residents through the connections of faith-based organizations. Joining the law enforcement group representatives and faith group representatives, the U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
We live in an extremely challenging time, a time when the bounds of trust between our communities and law enforcement are frayed, and the threat landscape is dynamic. In our increasingly interconnected society, trust is a key element of achieving public safety. The reality is that we can only strengthen and rebuild the bonds of trust by our actions. We are working with all of you, in partnership with you, in a number of different ways. We share information and intelligence with you, seeking to reach the broadest audience possible at the lowest classification level possible. Since early last year, we've issued more than 100 unclassified intelligence products and issued 6 national terrorism advisory system bulletins that describe and contextualize for the public the evolving threat environment in which we live. Our nonprofit security grant program supports security enhancements, planning, and training for nonprofit organizations and places of worship at risk of terrorist attacks. This year, we're providing $250 million, an increase of $70 million over last year. Through our emergency response grant programs, we've increased our funding to law enforcement agencies by more than $50 million as well. The tragedies in Buffalo, Uvalde, and Highland Park involved individuals who were exhibiting signs of serious decline down a path that involved an increasing interest in violence. We all recognize there is a critical need for prevention. At DHS, we're developing programs and resources to enable faith-based organizations, schools, healthcare services, law enforcement, school officials, friends, neighbors, and others in the community to build their capacity to prevent violent acts from happening in the first place. We in the Department of Homeland Security are bringing critical stakeholders together. Faith in Blue is a parallel effort that, through all of our presence here today, proves to be a powerful vehicle in the service of partnership and the safety and security our partnership is designed to achieve. We need to work as a community to address the threats to our community. Trust is essential to our success. Thank you to Faith in Blue for bringing us one step closer to it.
U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas at today's Faith in Blue Weekend Promotion Program. It was hosted by the group Movement Forward, held at the National Law Enforcement Museum in Washington, D.C., and included representatives from a number of law enforcement groups. President Biden signing documents today to allow Sweden and Finland to join the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. The U.S. Senate passing these protocols last week by a vote of 95-1. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri, the only no vote. Fox News put it this way: Finland and Sweden's membership will be the first significant expansion of the alliance since the Soviet Union's collapse in the 1990s. Their acceptance into the bloc marks a rebuke of Russia amid its ongoing invasion of Ukraine. President Biden speaking from the White House East Room.
Sweden and Finland have strong democratic institutions, strong militaries, and strong and transparent economies. They'll meet every NATO requirement. We're confident of that. And we will make our alliance stronger, and we'll make America and the American people safer in the process. That's why the United States Senate gave their advice and consent to Sweden and Finland's membership with overwhelming support, 95 votes in favor, near record pace. This year, we're celebrating significant bipartisan steps that are going to make our country stronger and enhance our ability to lead the world. We're showing the world that the United States of America can still do big things. This nearly unanimous bipartisan ratification sends another important message. The United States is committed. The United States is committed to the transatlantic alliance. Together with our allies and partners, we're going to write the future we want to see, the future we want to see. And in a moment when Putin's Russia has shattered peace and security in Europe, when autocrats are challenging the very foundations of a rule-based order, the strength of the transatlantic alliance and America's commitment to NATO is more important than it's ever been. That's why in June in Madrid, at a pivotal NATO summit, all 30 nations came together to invite Finland and Sweden to apply. It was a display of allied unity, allied strength, and allied resolve. Proof that NATO's door remains open to countries in Europe that share our values and that meet the high standards of our alliance. Putin thought he could break us apart when this all started. He believed he could break us apart, in my view, weaken our resolve. Instead, he's getting exactly what he did not want. He wanted the Finlandization of NATO, but he's getting the NATOization of Finland along with Sweden. I really mean it. In seeking to join NATO, Finland and Sweden are making a sacred commitment that an attack against one is an attack against all.
President Joe Biden at the White House. A story from NDTV out of India. According to a NATO list, the Czech Republic, Greece, Hungary, Portugal, Slovakia, Spain, and Turkey have yet to formally agree to the entry of Sweden and Finland into NATO out of the 30 NATO countries. The story goes on, but in fact, only Turkey has posed a challenge, demanding certain concessions from Finland and Sweden to back their memberships. Ankara has demanded the extradition of dozens of government opponents it labels terrorists from both countries in exchange for its support. Also this week, the Pentagon announcing another $1 billion in new military assistance being sent to Ukraine in its continued fight against Russia. David McCullough, writes the New York Times, who is known to millions as an award-winning best-selling author and an appealing television host and narrator with a rare gift for recreating the great events and characters of America's past, died on Sunday at his home in Hingham, Massachusetts, southeast of Boston. He was 89. Mr. McCullough won Pulitzer Prizes for two presidential biographies, Truman, 1992, and John Adams, 2001. He received National Book Awards for The Path Between the Seas, The Creation of the Panama Canal, 1977, and Mornings on Horseback, 1981, about the young Theodore Roosevelt and his family. That from New York Times. Dave McCullough also awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2006. McCullough was on C-SPAN a lot over the years. In 2019, an interview for his latest book, he spoke about growing up in Pittsburgh and learning to love history.
As Mark Twain showed us in his work, river towns are story towns. And I grew up hearing stories at home, at the dinner table, from my father or mother or grandmother about the terrible fires, the strikes, the floods of past times in Pittsburgh, some of the weird characters in my own family. And I loved it. So I didn't realize that was history at the time. Of course, it was.
David McCullough on C-SPAN's Q&A program in 2019. The host of that program, and many more like it over the years, Brian Lamb, retired C-SPAN CEO. He reflects on the death of David McCullough.
David McCullough was the kind of person that when he walked into our studios, everybody lit up. Smile on his face. His camaraderie with everybody, his warmth. It just was one of those people. He was just one of those people that people liked. And he was rarely political. As a matter of fact, I almost dropped off my chair when I was interviewing him a couple years ago, and he admitted having voted for Gerald Ford in the 1976 election. He rarely ever said who he voted for, or I don't think he was a Republican. I think he was very independent. But he also spoke to our whole staff, our colleagues here at C-SPAN, on our 20th anniversary. And that was, believe it or not, that was 23 years ago. And it was a memorable evening. We have about 77 videos in our library of David McCullough. I interviewed him about 10 different times, from Quincy, Massachusetts, to Thomaston, Maine, to down here in our studios. And it was always a very positive experience. I always loved to ask him, what's his next book? And he was reluctant sometimes to say, because he didn't want people to know what it was, or he hadn't made up his mind. But everybody liked the man, including, I was last night on Twitter, which I don't normally do, and I was looking around to see what people were saying about him. It took me an hour to read all the tweets about David McCullough, and most of them on the left, on the right, in the middle were all saying, what a tremendous loss, what a great historian, what a tremendous human being. So the memory of David McCullough for C-SPANers is right at the top. He did us a lot of favors by just coming here and talking to us and talking to our audience, and he always made it sound so important. And we appreciated that very much over the years. We'll miss him and his very lovely wife, Rosalie, and his daughter, Dory, who I had an interview with her on Q&A. And it was a Book Notes interview a number of years ago, and she was his manager. But what a strange experience to see two people who had been married over 60 years die within 2 months of each other at age 89. We'll miss David McCullough and Rosalie, and we wish the family the best.
Brian Lamb, C-SPAN's retired CEO. You can find all of the David McCullough interviews and other programming on Book TV at our video library at cspan.org. Dave McCullough dying on Sunday at the age of 89. His book publisher, Simon & Schuster, posting a tribute to him on its website, saying it was an honor to be his publisher for 54 years and they'll miss him greatly. And they added this quote from David McCullough: "History is human, and little of consequence is ever done alone." Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter Word for Word to get more of Washington's top stories sent to you each day. Go to c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.